said, as they reined up amidst the stumps, alone between the armies. The Darwolf banner of House Stark flapped and fluttered atop the lance he bore. Catelyn could not see the sea from here, but she could feel how close it was. The smell of salt was heavy on the wind, gusting from the east. Stannis Baratheon's foragers had cut the trees down for the siege towers and catapults. Catelyn wondered how long the grove had stood, and whether Ned had rested here when he led his host south to lift the last siege of Storm's End. He'd won a great victory that day, all the greater for being bloodless. God grant that I shall do the same, Catelyn prayed. Her own liegemen thought she was mad even to come.
This is no fight of ours, my lady, Sir Wendell Mandley had said. I know the king would not wish his mother to put herself at risk.
We are all at risk, she told him, perhaps too sharply. Do you think I wish to be here, sir? I belong at River Run with my dying father, at Winterfell with my sons. Rob sent me south to speak for him, and speak for him I shall. It would be no easy thing to forge a peace between these brothers, Catelyn knew, yet for the good of the realm it must be tried. Across rain, sodden fields and stony ridges, she could see the great castle of Storm's End rearing up against the sky, its back to the unseen sea. Beneath that mass of pale grey stone, the encircling army of Lord Stannis Baratheon looked as small and insignificant as mice with banners. The song said the Storm's End had been raised in ancient days by Durin, the first Storm King, who had won the love of the fair Elaenai, daughter of the sea god and the goddess of the wind. On the night of their wedding, Elaenai had yielded her maidenhood to a mortal's love, and thus doomed herself to a mortal's death. And her grieving parents had unleashed their wrath and sent the winds and waters to batter down Durin's hold. His friends and brothers and wedding guests were crushed beneath collapsing walls or blown out to sea. But Elaenai sheltered Durin within her arms, so he took no harm. And when the dawn came at last, he declared war upon the gods and vowed to rebuild. 5 more castles he built, each larger and stronger than the last, only to see them smashed asunder when the gale winds came howling up Shipbreaker Bay, driving great walls of water before them. His lords pleaded with him to build inland. His priests told him he must placate the gods by giving Elaenai back to the sea. Even the small folk begged him to relent. Durin would have none of it. A 7th castle he raised, most massive of all. Some said the children of the forest helped him build it, shaping the stones with magic. Others claimed that a small boy told him what he must do, a boy who would grow to be Bran the Builder. No matter how the tale was told, the end was the same. Though the angry gods threw storm after storm against it, the 7th castle stood defiant, and Durin Godsgrief and fair Elaenai dwelt there together until the end of their days. Gods do not forget, and still the gales came raging up the narrow sea. Yet Storm's End endured. Through centuries and tens of centuries, a castle like no other. Its great curtain wall was 100 feet high, unbroken by arrow slit or postern. Everywhere rounded, curving, smooth, its stones fit so cunningly together that nowhere was crevice nor angle nor gap by which the wind might enter. That wall was said to be 40 feet thick at its narrowest, and nearly 80 on the seaward face, a double course of stones with an inner core of sand and rubble. Within that mighty bulwark, the kitchens and stables and yards sheltered safe from wind and wave. Of towers, there was but one, a colossal drum tower, windowless where it faced the sea, so large that it was granary and barracks and feast hall and lord's dwelling all in one, crowned by massive battlements that made it look from afar like a spiked fist
atop an upthrust arm. My lady, Hal Mullen called. Two riders had emerged from the tidy little camp beneath the castle and were coming toward them at a slow walk. That will be King Stannis. No doubt, Catelyn watched them come. Stannis it must be. Yet that is not the Baratheon banner. It was a bright yellow, not the rich gold of Renly's standards, and the device it bore was red, though she could not make out its shape. Renly would be last to arrive. He had told her as much when she set out. He did not propose to mount his horse until he saw his brother well on his way. The first to arrive must wait on the other, and Renly would do no waiting. It is a sort of game, king's play, she told herself. Well, she was no king, so she need not play it. Catelyn was practiced at waiting. As he neared, she saw that Stannis wore a crown of red gold with points fashioned in the shape of flames. His belt was studded with garnets and yellow topaz, and a great square-cut ruby was set in the hilt of the sword he wore. Otherwise, his dress was plain. Studded leather jerkin over quilted doublet, worn boots, breeches of brown rough-spun. The device on his sun-yellow banner showed a red heart surrounded by a blaze of orange fire. The crown stag was there, yes, shrunken and enclosed within the heart. Even more curious was his standard-bearer, a woman, garbed all in reds, face shadowed within the deep hood of her scarlet cloak. A red priestess, Catelyn thought, wondering. The sect was numerous and powerful in the free cities and the distant east, but there were few in the Seven Kingdoms. Lady Stark, Stannis Baratheon said, with a chill courtesy as he reined up, inclined his head, balder than she remembered. Lord Stannis, she returned. Beneath the tight-trimmed beard, his heavy jaw clenched hard. Yet he did not hector her about titles. For that she was duly grateful. I had not thought to find you at Storm's End. I had not thought to be here. His deep-set eyes regarded her uncomfortably. This was not a man for easy courtesies. I'm sorry for your lord's death, he said, though Eddard Stark was no friend to me. He was never your enemy, my lord. When the lords Tyrell and Redwine held you prisoner in that castle, starving, it was Eddard Stark who broke the siege. At my brother's command, not for love of me, Stannis answered. Lord Eddard did his duty. I will not deny it. Did I ever do less? I should have been Robert's hand. That was your brother's will. Ned never wanted it. Yet he took it. That which should have been mine. Still, I give you my word, you shall have justice for his murder. How they love to promise heads, these men, who would be king. Your brother promised me the same, but if truth be told, I would sooner have my daughters back and leave justice to the gods. Cersei still holds my Sansa, and of Arya there has been no word since the day of Robert's death. If your children are found, when I take the city, they shall be sent to you. Alive or dead, his tone implied. And when shall that be, Lord Stannis? King's Landing is close to your Dragonstone, but I find you here instead. You are frank, Lady Stark. Very well, I'll answer you frankly. To take the city, I need the power of these southern lords I see across the field. My brother has them. I must needs take them from him. Men give their allegiance where they will, my lord. These lords swore fealty to Robert and House Baratheon. If you and your brother were to put aside your quarrel, I have no quarrel with Renly, should he prove dutiful. I am his elder and his king. I want only what is mine by rights. Renly owes me loyalty and obedience. I mean to have it. From him and from these other lords. Stannis studied her face. And what cause brings you to this field, milady? Has House Stark cast its lot with my brother? Is that the way of it? This one will never bend, she thought. Yet she must try nonetheless. Too much was at stake. My son reigns as king in the north, by the will of our lords and people. He bends the knee to no man, but holds out the hand of friendship to all. Kings have no friends, Stannis said bluntly. Only subjects and enemies. And brothers, a cheerful voice called out behind her. Catelyn glanced over her shoulder as Lord Renly's palfrey picked her way through the stumps. The younger Baratheon was splendid in his green velvet doublet and satin cloak trimmed in vair. The crown of golden roses girded his temples, jade stag's head rising over his forehead, long black hair spilling out beneath. Jagged chunks of black diamonds studded his sword belt, and a chain of gold and emeralds looped around his neck. Renly had chosen a woman to carry his banner as well, though Brienne hid face and form behind plate armor that gave no hint of her sex. Atop her 12-foot lance, the crown stag pranced black on gold as the wind off the sea rippled the cloth. His brother's greeting was curt. Lord Renly. King Renly, can that truly be you, Stannis? Stannis frowned. Well, should it be? Renly gave an easy shrug. When I saw that standard, I could not be certain. Whose banner do you bear?
Mine own. The red-clad priestess spoke up. The king has taken for his sigil the fiery heart of the Lord of Light.
Renly seemed amused by that. All for the good. If we both use the same banner, the battle will be terribly confused. Catelyn said, Let us hope there will be no battle. We three share a common foe who would destroy us all. Stannis studied her, unsmiling. The Iron Throne is mine by rights. All those who deny that are my foes.
The whole of the realm denies it, brother, said Renly. Old men deny it with their death rattle, and unborn children deny it in their mother's wombs. They deny it in Dawn, and they deny it on the Wall. No one wants you for their king.
Sorry. Stannis clenched his jaw, his face taut.
I swore I would never treat with you while you wore your traitor's crown. Would that I'd kept to that vow.
This is folly, Catelyn said sharply. Lord Tywin sits at Harrenhal with 20,000 swords. The remnants of the Kingslayer's army have regrouped at the Golden Tooth. Another Lannister host gathers beneath the shadow of Casterly Rock, and Cersei and her son hold King's Landing and your precious Iron Throne. You each name yourself king, yet the kingdom bleeds, and no one lifts the sword to defend it but my son. Renly shrugged. Your son has won a few battles. I shall win the war. The Lannisters can wait my pleasure.
If you have proposals to make, make them, Stannis said brusquely, or I will be gone.
Very well, said Renly. I propose you dismount, bend your knee, and swear me your allegiance.
Stannis choked back rage. That you shall never have.
You served Robert. Why not me?
Robert was my elder brother. You are the younger.
Younger, bolder, and far more comely.
And a thief, and a usurper besides.
Renly shrugged. The Targaryens called Robert usurper. He seemed to be able to bear the shame. So shall I.
This will not do.
Listen to yourselves. If you were sons of mine, I would bang your heads together and lock you in a bedchamber until you remembered that you were brothers.
Stannis frowned at her. You presume too much, Lady Stark. I am the rightful king, and your son no less a traitor than my brother here. His day will come as well.
The naked threat fanned her fury. You are very free to name others traitor and usurper, my lord. Yet how are you any different? You say you alone are the rightful king, yet it seems to me that Robert had two sons, By all the laws of the Seven Kingdoms, Prince Joffrey is his rightful heir, and Tommen after him. And we are all traitors, however good our reasons. Renly laughed. You must forgive Lady Catelyn, Stannis. She's come all the way down from Riverrun, a long way a horse. I fear she never saw your little letter. Joffrey is not my brother's seed, Stannis said bluntly. Nor is Tommen. They are bastards. The girl as well. All three of them abominations born of incest. Would even Cersei be so mad? Catelyn was speechless. Isn't that a sweet story, my lady? Renly asked. I was camped at Hornhill when Lord Tarly received his letter, and I must say it took my breath away. He smiled at his brother. I had never suspected you were so clever, Stannis. Were it only true, you would indeed be Robert's heir. Were it true? D'ye name me a liar? Can you prove any word of this fable? Stannis ground his teeth. Robert could never have known, Catelyn thought, or Cersei would have lost her head in an instant. Lord Stannis, she asked, if you knew the Queen to be guilty of such monstrous crimes, why did you keep silent?
I did not keep silent, Stannis declared. I brought my suspicions to John Arryn.
Rather than your own brother?
My brother's regard for me was never more than dutiful, said Stannis. From me, such accusations would have seemed peevish and self-serving, a means of placing myself first in the line of succession. I believe Robert would have been more disposed to listen if the charges came from Lord Arryn, whom he loved.
Ah, said Renly. So we have the word of a dead man.
D'ye think he died by happenstance, you purblind fool? Cersei had him poisoned, for fear he would reveal her. Lord John had been gathering certain proofs, which doubtless died with him. How inconvenient.
Catelyn was remembering fitting pieces together. My sister, Lysa, accused the Queen of killing her husband in a letter she sent me at Winterfell, she admitted. Later, in the Eyrie, she laid the murder at the feet of the Queen's brother, Tyrion. Stannis snorted.
Tch! If you step in a nest of snakes, does it matter which one bites you first?
All this of snakes and incest is droll, but to change is nothing. You may well have the better claim, Stannis, but I still have the larger army. Renly's hand slid inside his cloak. Stannis saw and reached at once for the hilt of his sword. But before he could draw steel, his brother produced a peach. Would you like one, brother? Renly asked, smiling. From High Garden. You've never tasted anything so sweet, I promise you. He took a bite. Juice ran from the corner of his mouth.
I did not come here to eat fruit. Stannis was fuming.
My lords, Catelyn said, we ought to be hammering out the terms of an alliance, not trading taunts. A man should never refuse to taste a peach, Renly said, as he tossed the stone away. He may never get the chance again. Life is short, Stannis. Remember what the Starks say. Winter is coming. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
I did not come here to be threatened either.
Nor were you, Renly snapped back. When I make threats, you'll know it. If truth be told, I've never liked you, Stannis, but you are my own blood, and I have no wish to slay you. So if it is Storm's End you want, take it as a brother's gift. As Robert once gave it to me, I give it to you.
It's not yours to give. It's mine by rights.
Sighing, Renly half turned in the saddle. What am I to do with this brother of mine, Brian? He refuses my peach, he refuses my castle. He even shunned my wedding.
We both know your wedding was a mama's farce. A year ago, you were scheming to make the girl one of Robert's whores.
A year ago, I was scheming to make the girl Robert's queen, Renly said. But what does it matter? The boar got Robert, and I got Margaery. You'll be pleased to know she came to me a maid. in your bed, she's like to die that way. Oh, I expect I'll get a son on her within the year. Pray, how many sons do you have, Stannis? Oh, yes. None. Renly smiled innocently. As to your daughter, I understand. If my wife looked like yours, I'd send my fool to service her as well.
Enough, Stannis roared. I will not be mocked to my face. Do you hear me? I will not.
He yanked his longsword from its scabbard. The steel gleamed strangely bright in the wan sunlight, now red, now yellow, now blazing white. The air around it seemed to shimmer as if from heat. Catelyn's horse whinnied and backed away a step. But Brienne moved between the brothers, her own blade in hand.
Put up your steel,
she shouted at Stannis. Cersei Lannister is laughing herself breathless, Catelyn thought wearily. Stannis pointed his shining sword at his brother.
I'm not without mercy, thundered he who was notoriously without mercy, nor do I wish to sully Lightbringer with a brother's blood. For the sake of the mother who bore us both, I will give you this night to rethink your folly, Renly. Strike your banners and come to me before dawn, and I will grant you Storm's End and your old seat on the council, and even name you my heir until a son is born to me. Otherwise, I shall destroy you.
Renly laughed. Stannis, that's a very pretty sword, I'll grant you, but I think the glow off it has ruined your eyes. Look across the fields, brother. Can you see all those banners?
Do you think a few bolts of cloth will make you king?
Tyrell's swords will make me king. Rowan and Tarly and Karen will make me king with axe and mace and warhammers. Tarth arrows and Penrose lances. Fossaway, Kai, Mullendore, Estamont, Selmy, Hightower, Oakhart, Crane, Caswell, Black Bar, Morrigan, Beesbury, Shermer, Dunn, Footley, even House Florent, your own wife's brothers and uncles, they will make me king. All the chivalry of the South rides with me, and that is the least part of my power. My foot is coming behind. 100,000 swords and spears and pikes. And you will destroy me? With what, pray? That paltry rabble I see there, huddled under the castle walls? I'll call them 5,000, and be generous. Cudfish lords and onion knights and sail swords. Half of them are like to come over to me before the battle starts. You have fewer than 400 horse, my scouts tell me. Free riders in boiled leather, who will not stand an instant against armoured lances. I do not care how seasoned a warrior you think you are, Stannis. That host of yours won't survive the first charge of my vanguard.
We shall see, brother.
Some of the light seemed to go out of the world when Stannis slid his sword back into its scabbard.
Come the dawn, we shall see.
I hope your new god's a merciful one, brother. Stannis snorted and galloped away, disdainful. The Red Priestess lingered for a moment behind.
Look to your own sins, Lord Renly, she said, as she wheeled a horse around.
Catelyn and Lord Renly returned together to the camp where his thousands and her few waited their return. That was amusing, if not terribly profitable, he commented. I wonder where I can get a sword like that. Well, doubtless Loras will make me a gift of it after the battle. It grieves me that it must come to this. You have a cheerful way of grieving, said Catelyn, whose distress was not feigned. Do I? Renly shrugged. So be it. Stannis was never the most cherished of brothers, I confess. Do you suppose this tale of his is true? If Joffrey is the Kingslayer's git, your brother is the lawful heir while he lives, Renly admitted. Though it's a fool's law, wouldn't you agree? Why the older son and not the best fitted? The crown will suit me, as it never suited Robert and would not suit Stannis. I have it in me to be a great king, strong, yet generous, clever, just, diligent, loyal to my friends, and terrible to my enemies, yet capable of forgiveness, patient, humble, Catelyn supplied. Renly laughed. You must allow a king some flaws, my lady. Catelyn felt very tired. It had all been for nothing. The Baratheon brothers would drown each other in blood while her son faced the Lannisters alone. And nothing she could say or do would stop it. It's past time I went back to River Run to close my father's eyes, she thought. That much at least I can do. I may be a poor envoy, but I am a good mourner. God save me. Their camp was well sighted atop a low, stony ridge that ran from north to south. It was far more orderly than the sprawling encampment on the Mander, though only a quarter as large. When he'd learned of his brother's assault on Storm's End, Renly had split his forces, much as Rob had done at the Twins. His great mass of foot he had left behind at Bitterbridge, with his young queen, his wagons, carts, draft animals, and all his cumbersome siege machinery, while Renly himself led his knights and free riders in a swift dash east. How like his brother, Robert, he was, even in that. Only Robert had always had Eddard Stark to temper his boldness with caution. Ned would surely have prevailed upon Robert to bring up his whole force, to encircle Stannis and besiege the besiegers. That choice Renly had denied himself in his headlong rush to come to grips with his brother. He had outdistanced his supply lines, left food and forage days behind with all his wagons and mules and oxen. He must come to battle soon, or starve. Catelyn sent Hal Mullen to tend to their horses while she accompanied Renly back to the royal pavilion at the heart of the encampment. Inside the walls of green silk, his captains and lords' bannermen were waiting to hear word of the parley. My brother has not changed, the young king told them, as Brienne unfastened his cloak and lifted the golden jade crown from his brow. Castles and courtesies will not appease him. He must have blood. Well, I am of a mind to grant his wish. Your Grace, I see no need for battle here, Lord Mathis Rowan put in. The castle is strongly garrisoned and well provisioned. Sir Courtney Penrose is a seasoned commander, and the trebuchet has not been built as it could breach the walls of Storm's End. Let Lord Stannis have his siege. He will find no joy in it, and whilst he sits cold and hungry and profitless, we will take King's Landing. And have men say, I fear to face Stannis. Only fools will say that, Lord Mathis argued. Renly looked to the others. What say you all? I say that Stannis is a danger to you, Lord Randall Tarly declared. Leave him unblooded, and he will only grow stronger, while your own power is diminished by battle. The Lannisters will not be beaten in a day. By the time you are done with them, Lord Stannis may be as strong as you, or stronger. Others chorused their agreement. The king looked pleased. We shall fight, then. I have failed Rob, as I fail Ned, Catelyn thought. My lord, she announced, if you are set on battle, my purpose here is done. I ask your leave to return to River Run. You do not have it. Renly seated himself on a camp chair. She stiffened. I had hoped to help you to make peace, my lord. I will not help you to make a war. Renly gave a shrug. I dare say we'll prevail without your 25, my lady. I do not mean for you to take part in the battle, only to watch it. I was at the Whispering Wood, my lord. I've seen enough butchery. I came here an envoy. And an envoy you shall leave, Renly said, but wiser than you came. You shall see what befalls rebels with your own eyes, so your son can hear it from your own lips. We'll keep you safe, never fear. He turned away to make his dispositions. Lord Mathis, you shall lead the center of my main battle, Bryce, you'll have the left. The right is mine. Lord Estamont, you shall command the reserve. I shall not fail you, Your Grace, Lord Estamont replied. Lord Mathis Rowan spoke up. Who shall have the van? Your Grace, said Sir John Fosaway, I beg the honour. Beg all you like, said Sir Gaillard the Green. By rights, it should be one of the seven who strikes the first blow. It takes more than a pretty cloak to charge a shield war, Randall Tarley announced. I was leading Mace Tyrell's van when you were still sucking on your mother's tit, Gaillard. A clamour filled the pavilion as other men loudly set forth their claims. The knights of summer, Catelyn thought. Renly raised a hand. Enough, my lords. If I had a dozen vans, all of you should have one. But the greatest glory by rights belongs to the greatest knight. Sir Loris shall strike the first blow. With a glad heart, Your Grace, the Knight of Flowers knelt before the king. Grant me your blessing and a knight to ride beside me with your banner. Let the stag and rose go to battle side by side. Renly glanced about him. Brian, Your Grace. She was still armoured in her blue steel, though she had taken off her helm. The crowded tent was hot, and sweat plastered limp yellow hair to her broad, homely face. My place is at your side. I am your sworn shield. One of seven, the king reminded her. Never fear. Four of your fellows will be with me in the fight. Brian dropped to her knees. If I must part from Your Grace, grant me the honour of arming you for battle. Catelyn heard someone snigger behind her. She loves him, poor thing, she thought, sadly. She'd play his squire just to touch him, and never care how great a fool they think her. Granted, Renly said. Now leave me, all of you. Even kings must rest before a battle. My lord, Catelyn said, there was a small sept in the last village we passed. If you will not permit me to dot to this sept, but see that she returns to us by dawn. For victory, for wisdom. Renly laughed. Loris, stay and help me pray. It's been so long I've quite forgotten how. As to the rest of you, I want every man in place by first light, armed, armoured, and horsed. We shall give Stannis a dawn he will not soon forget. Dusk was falling when Catelyn left the pavilion. Sir Robar Royce fell in beside her. She knew him slightly, one of Bronze Yon's sons, comely in a rough-hewn way, a tawny warrior of some renown. Renly had gifted him with a rainbow cloak and a suit of blood-red armour, and named him one of his seven. You are a long way from the Vale, sir, she told him.
And you far from Winterfell, my lady.
I know what brought me here, but why have you come? This is not your battle, no more than it is mine.
I made it my battle when I made Renly my king.
The Royces are bannermen to House Arryn. My lord father owes Lady Lyser fealty, as does his heir. A second son must find glory where he can. Sir Robar shrugged. A man grows weary of tourneys. He could not be older than 21, Catelyn thought, of an age with his king. But her king, her Rob, had more wisdom at 15 than this youth had ever learned. Or so she prayed. In Catelyn's small corner of the camp, Shad was slicing carrots into a kettle. Hal Mullen was dicing with three of his Winterfell men, and Lucas Blackwood sat sharpening his dagger.
Lady Stark, Lucas said when he saw her. Mullen says it is to be battle at dawn.
Hal has the truth of it, she answered. And a loose tongue as well, it would seem.
Do we fight or flee?
We pray, Lucas, she answered him. We pray. Sansa.
The longer you keep him waiting, the worse it will go for you, Sandor Clegane warned her.
Sansa tried to hurry, but her fingers fumbled at buttons and knots. The hound was always rough-tongued, but something in the way he had looked at her filled her with dread. Had Joffrey found out about her meetings with Ser Dontos? Please, no, she thought as she brushed out her hair. Ser Dontos was her only hope. I have to look pretty. Joff likes me to look pretty. He's always liked me in this gown, this color. She smoothed the cloth down. The fabric was tight across her chest. When she emerged, Sansa walked on the hound's left, away from the burn side of his face. Tell me what I've done. Not you, your kingly brother. Rob's a traitor. Sansa knew the words by rote. I had no part in whatever he did. Gods be good, don't let it be the Kingslayer. If Rob had harmed Jaime Lannister, it would mean her life. She thought of Sir Ilyen and those terrible pale eyes staring pitilessly out of that gaunt, pockmarked face. The hound snorted. I trained you well, little bird. He conducted her to the lower bailey, where a crowd had gathered around the archery butts. Men moved aside to let them through. She could hear Lord Giles coughing. Loitering stable hands eyed her insolently, but Sir Horace Redwine averted his gaze as she passed, and his brother Hubba pretended not to see her. A yellow cat was dying on the ground, mewling piteously. A crossbow quarrel through its ribs. Sansa stepped around it, feeling ill. Ser Dontos approached on his broomstick horse. Since he'd been too drunk to mount his destrier at the tourney, the king had decreed that henceforth he must always go horsed. Be brave, he whispered, squeezing her arm. Joffrey stood in the center of the throng, winding an ornate crossbow. Sir Boris and Sir Meryn were with him. The sight of them was enough to tie her insides in knots. Your Grace, she fell to her knees. Kneeling won't save you now, the king said. Stand up. You are here to answer for your brother's latest treasons. Your Grace, whatever my traitor brother has done, I had no part. You know that. I beg you, please, get her up. The hound pulled her to her feet, not ungently. Sir Lancel, Joff said. Tell her of this outrage. Sansa had always thought Lancel Lannister comely and well-spoken, but there was neither pity nor kindness in the look he gave her. Using some vile sorcery, your brother fell upon Sir Stafford Lannister with an army of wargs, not 3 days' ride from Lannisport. Thousands of good men were butchered as they slept without the chance to lift sword. After the slaughter, the Northmen feasted on the flesh of the slain. Horror coiled cold hands around Sansa's throat. You have nothing to say? Asked Joffrey. Your Grace, the poor child is shot witless, murmured Ser Dontos. Silence, fool! Joffrey lifted his crossbow and pointed it at her face. You Starks are as unnatural as those wolves of yours. I've not forgotten how your monster savaged me. That was Arya's wolf, she said. Lady never hurt you, but you killed her anyway. No, your father did, Joff said. But I killed your father. I wish I'd done it myself. I killed a man last night who was bigger than your father. They came to the gates, shouting my name and calling for bread like I was some baker. But I taught them better. I shot the loudest of them, right through the throat. And he died. With the ugly head of the quarrel staring her in the face, it was hard to think what else to say. Of course he died. He had my quarrel in his throat. There was a woman throwing rocks. I got her as well, but only in the arm. Frowning, he lowered the crossbow. I'd shoot you too, but if I do, Mother says they'd kill my Uncle Jaime. Instead, you'll just be punished. And we'll send word to your brother about what will happen to you if he doesn't yield. Dog, hit her. Let me beat her, Ser Dontos shoved forward, tin armor clattering. He was armed with a morning star whose head was a melon. My Florian. She could have kissed him, blotchy skin and broken veins and all. He trotted his broomstick around her, shouting, "Traitor! Traitor!" and whacking her over the head with a melon. Sansa covered herself with her hands, staggering every time the fruit pounded her, her hair sticky by the second blow. People were laughing. The melon flew to pieces. "Laugh, Joffrey," she prayed as the juice ran down her face and the front of her blue silk gown. "Laugh and be satisfied." Joffrey did not so much as snigger. "Boris? Meryn?" Sir Meryn Trant seized Dantus by the arm and flung him brusquely away. The red-faced fool went sprawling, broomstick, melon and all. Sir Boris seized Sansa. "Leave her face," Joffrey commanded. "I like her pretty." Boris slammed a fist into Sansa's belly, driving the air out of her. When she doubled over, the knight grabbed her hair and drew his sword, and for one hideous instant, she was certain he meant to open her throat. As he lay the flat of the blade across her thighs, she thought her legs might break from the force of the blow. Sansa screamed, tears welled in her eyes. "It will be over soon." She soon lost count of the blows. "Enough," she heard the hound rasp.
"No, it isn't," the king replied. "Boris, make her naked."
Boris shoved a meaty hand on the front of Sansa's bodice and gave a hard yank. The silk came tearing away, baring her to the waist. Sansa covered her breast with her hands. She could hear sniggers, far off and cruel.
"Beat her bloody," Joffrey said. "We'll see how her brother fancies. What is the meaning of this?"
The imp's voice cracked like a whip, and suddenly Sansa was free. She stumbled to her knees, arms crossed over her chest, her breath ragged.
"Is this your notion of chivalry, Sir Boris?"
Tyrion Lannister demanded angrily. His pet sellsword stood with him, and one of his wildlings, the one with the burned eye.
"What sort of knight beats helpless maids?"
"The sort who serves his king, imp."
Sir Boris raised his sword, and Sir Meryn stepped up beside him, his blade scraping clean of its scabbard.
"Careful with those," warned the dwarf's sellsword. "You don't want to get blood all over those pretty white cloaks."
"Someone give the girl something to cover herself with," the imp said.
Sandor Clegane unfastened his cloak and tossed it at her. Sansa clutched it against her chest, fists bunched hard in the white wool. The coarse weave was scratchy against her skin, but no velvet ever felt so fine.
"This girl's to be your queen," the imp told Joffrey. "Have you no regard for her honor?" "I'm punishing her."
"For what crime?"
"She did not fight her brother's battle. She has the blood of a wolf, and you have the wits of a goose."
"You can't talk to me that way. The king can do as he likes."
"Aerys Targaryen did as he liked. Has your mother ever told you what happened to him?"
Sir Boris Blunt hurrumped. "No man threatens his grace in the presence of the king's guard."
Tyrion Lannister raised an eyebrow.
"I'm not threatening the king, sir. I'm educating my nephew, Bronn Timmit.
The next time Sir Boris opens his mouth, kill him."
The dwarf smiled.
"Now that was a threat, sir. See the difference?"
Sir Boris turned a dark shade of red.
"The queen will hear of this."
"No doubt she will. And why wait? Joffrey, shall we send for your mother?"
The king flushed.
"Nothing to say, your grace," his uncle went on. "Good. Learn to use your ears more and your mouth less, or your reign will be shorter than I am. Wanton brutality is no way to win your people's love, or your queen's."
"Fear is better than love, mother says." Joffrey pointed at Sansa. "She fears me."
The imp sighed. "Yes, I see.
A pity Stannis and Renly aren't 12-year-old girls as well. Bronn, Timmit, bring her.
Sansa moved as if in a dream. She thought the imp's men would take her back to her bedchamber in Maegor's Holdfast, but instead they conducted her to the Tower of the Hand. She had not set foot inside that place since the day her father fell from grace, and it made her feel faint to climb those steps again. Some serving girls took charge of her, mouthing meaningless comforts to stop her shaking. One stripped off the ruins of her gown and small clothes, and another bathed her and washed the sticky juice from her face and her hair. As they scrubbed her down with soap and sluiced warm water over her head, all she could see were the faces from the bailey. Knights are sworn to defend the weak, protect women, and fight for the right. But none of them did a thing.
Only Sedontus had tried to help, and he was no longer a knight. No more than the imp was, nor the hound. The hound hated knights.
I hate them too, Sansa thought. They are no true knights, not one of them.
After she was clean, plump, ginger-headed Maester Frenkin came to see her. He bid her lie face down on the mattress while he spread a salve across the angry red welts that covered the backs of her legs. Afterwards, he mixed her a draught of dream wine with some honey so it might go down easier.
Sleep a bit, child. When you awake, all this will seem a bad dream.
No, it won't, you stupid man, Sansa thought. But she drank the dream wine anyway and slept. It was dark when she woke again, not quite knowing where she was. The room, both strange and strangely familiar. As she rose, a stab of pain went through her legs and brought it all back. Tears filled her eyes. Someone had laid out a robe for her beside the bed. Sansa slipped it on and opened the door. Outside stood a hard-faced woman with leathery brown skin. Three necklaces looped about her scrawny neck. One was gold, and one was silver, and one was made of human ears.
"Where does she think she's going?"
the woman asked, leaning on a tall spear. "The guards would." She had to find Sedontis, beg him to take her home now, before it was too late.
"The half-man says you're not to leave," the woman says. "Pray here. The gods will hear."
Meekly, Sansa dropped her eyes and retreated back inside. She realized suddenly why this place seemed so familiar. "They've put me in Arya's old bedchamber, from when Father was the Hand of the King. All her things are gone, and the furnishings have been moved around, but it's the same." A short time later, a serving girl brought a platter of cheese and bread and olives with a flagon of cold water. "Take it away," Sansa commanded, but the girl left the food on the table. She was thirsty, she realized. Every step sent knives through her thighs, but she made herself cross the room. She drank two cups of water and was nibbling on an olive when the knock came. Anxiously, she turned toward the door, smoothed down the folds of her robe. "Yes?" The door opened, and Tyrion Lannister stepped inside.
"My lady, I trust I'm not disturbing you."
"Am I your prisoner?"
"My guest."
He was wearing his chain of office, a necklace of linked golden hands.
I thought we might talk."
"As my lord commands." Sansa found it hard not to stare. His face was so ugly, it held a queer fascination for her.
"The food and garments are to your satisfaction?" he asked. "If there is anything else you need, you have only to ask."
"You are most kind. And this morning, it was very good of you to help me."
"You have a right to know why Joffrey was so wroth. 6 nights gone, your brother fell upon my uncle Stafford and camped with his host at a village called Oxcross, not 3 days' ride from Casterly Rock. Your northerners won a crushing victory. We received word only this morning."
"Rob will kill you all," she thought, exulting.
"It's terrible, my lord," My brother is a vile traitor. The dwarf smiled wanly.
Well, he's no fawn. He's made that clear enough.
Sir Lancel said Rob led an army of wags. The imp gave a disdainful bark of laughter.
Sir Lancel's a wineskin warrior who wouldn't know a wag from a wart. Your brother had his dire wolf with him, but I suspect that's as far as it went. The Northman crept into my uncle's camp and cut his horse lines, and Lord Stark sent his wolf among them. Even war-trained destriers went mad. Knights were trampled to death in their pavilions, and the rabble woke in terror and fled, casting aside their weapons to run the faster. Sir Stafford was slain as he chased after a horse Lord Rickard Carstark drove a lance through his chest. Sir Rupert Brax is also dead, along with Sir Lyman Vickery, Lord Craycall, and Lord Jast. 50 more have been taken captive, including Jast's sons and my nephew, Martin Lannister. Those who survived are spreading wild tales and saying that the old gods of the North march with your brother.
Then there was no sorcery? Lannister snorted.
Sorcery is the sauce fools spoon over failure to hide the flavor of their own incompetence. My mutton-headed uncle had not even troubled to post centuries, it would seem. His host was raw, apprentice boys, miners, field hands, fisher folk, the sweepings of Lannisport. The only mystery is how your brother reached him. Our forces still hold the stronghold at the Golden Tooth, and they swear he did not pass. The dwarf gave an irritated shrug. Well, Rob Stark is my father's bane. Joffrey is mine. Tell me, what do you feel for my kingly nephew?
I love him with all my heart, Sansa said at once.
Truly? He did not sound convinced. Even now, my love for his grace is greater than it ever has been. The imp laughed aloud. Well, someone has taught you to lie well. You may be grateful for that one day, child. You are a child still, are you not? Or have you flowered?
Sansa blushed. It was a rude question, but the shame of being stripped before half the castle made it seem like nothing.
No, my lord. Oh, that's all to the good. If it gives you any solace, I do not intend that you ever wed Joffrey. Marriage will reconcile Stark and Lannister after all that has happened, I fear. More's the pity. The match was one of King Robert's better notions, if Joffrey hadn't mucked it up.
She knew she ought to say something, but the words caught in her throat.
You grow very quiet, Tyrion Lannister observed. Is this what you want? An end to your betrothal?
Sansa did not know what to say.
Is it a trick? Will he punish me?
The crooked teeth and wiry beard.
I only want to be loyal. Loyal, the dwarf mused, and far from any Lannisters. I can scarce blame you for that. When I was your age, I wanted the same thing.
He smiled.
They tell me you visit the God's Wood every day. What do you pray for, Sansa?
I pray for Rob's victory and Joff's death, and for home, for Winterfell.
I pray for an end to the fighting.
We'll have that soon enough. There will be another battle between your brother Rob and my lord father, and that will settle the issue.
Rob will beat him, Sansa thought. He beat your uncle and your brother Jaime. He'll beat your father too. It was as if her face were an open book, so easily did the dwarf read her hopes.
Do not take Oxcross too much to heart, my lady, he told her, not unkindly.
A battle is not a war, and my lord father is assuredly not my uncle Stafford. The next time you visit the Godswood, pray that your brother has the wisdom to bend the knee. Once the North returns to the king's peace, I mean to send you home. He hopped down off the window seat and said, You may sleep here tonight.
I'll give you some of my own men as a guard. Some stone crows, perhaps. No, Sansa blurted out aghast. If she was locked in the Tower of the Hand, guarded by the dwarf's men, how would Ser Dontos ever spirit her away to freedom? Would you prefer black ears? I'll give you Chella, if a woman would make you more at ease. Please, no, my lord. The wildlings frighten me. He grinned. Me as well. But more to the point, they frighten Joffrey and that nest of sly vipers and lick-spittle dogs he calls a king's guard. With Chella or Timmet by your side, no one would dare offer you arm. I would sooner return to my own bed. A lie came to her suddenly, but it seemed so right that she blurted it out at once. This tower was where my father's men were slain. Their ghosts would give me terrible dreams, and I would see their blood wherever I looked. Tyrion Lannister studied her face. I am no stranger to nightmares, Sansa. Perhaps you are wiser than I knew. Permit me at least to escort you safely back to your own chambers.
Catelyn. It was full dark before they found the village. Catelyn found herself wondering if the place had a name. If so, its people had taken that knowledge with them when they fled, along with all they owned, down to the candles in the sept. Sir Wendell lit a torch and led her through the low door. Within, the seven walls were cracked and crooked. God is one, Septon Osm had taught her when she was a girl, with seven aspects, as the sept is a single building with seven walls. The wealthiest septs of the cities had statues of the seven and an altar to each. In Winterfell, Septon Shale hung carved masks from each wall. Here, Catelyn found only rough charcoal drawings. Sir Wendell set the torch in a sconce near the door and left to wait outside with Robar Royce. Catelyn studied the faces. The father was bearded, as ever. The mother smiled, loving and protective. The warrior had his sword sketched in beneath his face. The smith, his hammer. The maid was beautiful. The crone, wizened and wise. And the seventh face, the stranger, was neither male nor female. Yet both, ever the outcast, the wanderer from fireplaces, less and more than human, unknown and unknowable. Here the face was a black oval, a shadow with stars for eyes. It made Catelyn uneasy. She would get scant comfort there. She knelt before the mother. My lady, look down on this battle with a mother's eyes. They are all sons, every one. Spare them if you can, and spare my own sons as well. Watch over Rob and Bran and Rickon. Would that I were with them. A crack ran down through the mother's left eye. It made her look as if she were crying. Catelyn could hear Sir Wendell's booming voice, and now and again Sir Robar's quiet answers, as they talked of the coming battle. Otherwise, the night was still. Not even a cricket could be heard, and the guards kept their silence. Did your old guards ever answer you, Ned? She wondered. When you knelt before your heart tree, did they hear you? Flickering torchlight danced across the walls, making the faces seem half alive, twisting them, changing them. The statues in the great septs of the cities wore the faces the stonemasons had given them. But these charcoal scratchings were so crude, they might be anyone. The father's face made her think of her own father dying in his bed at Riverrun. The warrior was Renly and Stannis, Rob and Robert, Jaime Lannister and Jon Snow. She even glimpsed Arya in those lines, just for an instant. Then a gust of wind through the door made the torch sputter, and the semblance was gone, washed away in orange glare. The smoke was making her eyes burn. She rubbed at them with the heels of her scarred hands. When she looked up at the mother again, it was her own mother she saw. Lady Minister Tully had died in childbed, trying to give Lord Hustler a second son. The baby had perished with her, and afterward,